The overarching goal of any type of therapy is to establish rapport and create an open, trusting, and safe relationship for the client. And for several practical reasons, an attorney also should strive to achieve rapport with their client. For one, an attorney has to obtain a lot of detailed, nuanced information, like financial information, medical information, information about family dynamics, and a client's going to be a lot more willing to share that information if they trust the attorney and if, for lack of a better word, if they like the attorney. So in attachment A is the questionnaire that I propose in order to start gaining all of that nuanced information. But also there are marketing reasons why an attorney might want to establish a good rapport with clients, because if clients feel comfortable with you there and somebody asks them for an attorney referral, they're going to feel comfortable in referring their friends and their family because they will be in good hands when the client refers future clients to you. So it's an income revenue source. Plus, if the client needs additional legal work in the future, they're more likely to come back. So just purely from a business standpoint, it's a good idea to have a good relationship with your clients. But rapport to me is also a two-way street. And because it's not all about just making sure that the client likes the attorney or that a client is trusting of the attorney, I think that a rapport or a lack of rapport is also very instructive for the attorney in order to assess cases and whether deciding they want to represent this client to begin with. There's a disciplinary rule that talks about the duty of an attorney to decline representation if the attorney's physical, mental, or psychological condition materially impairs their fitness to represent a client. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that if there's a lack of rapport between an attorney and a client, perhaps that's some form of an impairment. It's not a saying that the attorney is unfit or any type of shortcoming on the part of the attorney. It's just that there is a barrier of some sort that might make it more difficult for the client and the attorney to work together. And so if that situation is in place, there might be the tendency for the attorney to be less of an advocate for the client. And when we start going down that road, perhaps we don't return phone calls quickly, we let matters languish, or we're just not going to be as excited about helping that client. And all of those things really could lead to disciplinary action. So I feel that if you don't hit it off right with the client to begin with, maybe that's a sign that maybe you shouldn't take representation and save yourself these future complaints and whatnot. Okay, so how do we establish rapport? Well, at the beginning of the appointment, it's good to ask clients about themselves and what brings them in. Found a blog by an attorney that had been practicing for 40 years or more, and he found that clients are put at ease by talking about familiar subjects. And so asking a client initially about themselves, about the beneficiary, what brings them in, really starts to build goodwill that the attorney is listening to the client and it really cares what that client has to say. Now, rapport takes time to build. It's not something that happens automatically just because we're attorneys and just because we're all great and we have a lot of knowledge and supplemental needs trust or we've been practicing for years or whatever, that doesn't mean that a client is going to automatically trust us. And so we have to be patient and give clients that leeway. Barbara Walters, interestingly enough, you know, we all know her as a very experienced and famous interviewer. She always saved her hard questions for the end of her interviews. And I can't help but think that perhaps maybe that's because she also recognized that it takes time to build rapport. And so a client is more likely to share juicy tidbits maybe towards the end of an appointment when they feel more comfortable. And psychologists have also found that rapport is really difficult to establish with clients who had been in therapy before but who didn't find that therapy useful. And the way to combat that, therapists are taught to teach clients that therapy can provide new perspectives or there's this possibility for growth in therapy. So in other words, therapists are taught to communicate the value of what they do. And so as attorneys, you know, unfortunately, we've got negative reputations, some of us, not us in this room, obviously, or online either, but just the profession in general. Some people just have a barrier to wanting to work with attorneys. They don't see the value of what we do. And so it's incredibly important to communicate the value of what we can provide. You know, with the supplemental needs trust, we are protecting that beneficiary potentially from themselves or from other people who may want to take advantage of them when family members that do protect this beneficiary are no longer around. That's a huge value that needs to be communicated to clients. Also, providing examples of the value of what a S&T can provide as far as distributions. As Molly Abshire pointed out earlier, SSI is a meager existence. It's not that much money. And so if a supplemental needs trust can supplement a beneficiary's care and provide additional entertainment or therapies, all kinds of things that can improve the quality of life, that's a huge value to a client as well, and they need to be told that. In addition, you could calculate the lifetime dollar amount that would be spent on medical expenses for a client if they didn't have Medicaid. That's going to be an astronomical number. So if that alone doesn't do it, well, I mean, you can only do so much, but that it's just important to communicate the value because what we do, in my opinion, is incredibly important, and it's a very good service to clients.